Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. Here we are for another Growth Matters show, and it is hard to believe that we are in the beginning of December, looking toward ending on a good note, 2013, and people are beginning to set their sights for 2014. And so I'm really excited this morning that we have three owners of their own business, but people who provide advice and counsel to businesses in three very specific areas. So we have Linda Brenner, who is the founder and CEO of Designs on Talent, as well as another organization called Skillsify. And Linda's focus is in the area of HR, so we welcome her here this morning.
Thank you.
We also have Maura Vetter, and she is the CEO of Motomoto Agency. And Motomoto is a strategic business-to-business marketing firm, and so she's going to be giving us some insights into the area of marketing.
Thank you for having me.
And last but certainly not least, we have John Masters. And John Masters is a CPA. His firm is John Masters CPA. And if you could sort of guess by the name of his firm, he is our CPA. And also he has a legal background. So he can give us a little bit of insights on both of those areas.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
So as I said, today's focus of the show, in addition to learning a little bit about each of your firms, is to really help our listeners think about how to get a fast start in 2014. And what are some of the things that, as we wind down 2013, we need to be as owners of businesses or as managers in businesses thinking about. But before we go specifically to that topic, I'd like to give each of our guests an opportunity to share a little bit about their organization and the type of services that they provide. So, Linda, I'll start with you. Tell us a little bit more about Designs on Talent.
Sure. Designs on Talent is an HR consulting firm. So we help businesses improve the way they hire and retain employees. We don't place employees, so we don't actually hire employees for companies, but we'll work with companies like Chick-fil-A, Microsoft, Dell, Coca-Cola, mostly big firms in helping them assess and really process improve their HR systems.
Great. And you also have another firm as well that sort of is a complement to that. Why don't
Yes.
you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Skillsify is an HR technology firm that delivers applications to speed and scale and measure some of those efforts.
Great, great. And Maura, you are with Motomoto, and I was looking at a little bit of information, and I understand you've had several enterprises that you have started and or headed, mm-hmm. and that in the Atlanta Business Chronicle for 2010, you were second fastest growing woman-owned business, mm-hmm. And so that's impressive. So tell us a little bit about Motomoto.
Okay. Well, we are a strategic B2B marketing firm, and the important thing about being a strategic marketing firm is you start at the top of the organization. So, your topic about growth and a speedy, focus getting into 2014 is critical because we work closely with the CEOs, the CFO, COO, senior HR functions to really understand what a company must get done and then how marketing can support them in that effort. And we look at marketing very broadly. It's not just the promotional P of marketing. It's, how you're positioned and how you go to market and how you look at yourself vis-a-vis your competitors and what your internal staff believes about who you are with your customers. And so there's, we are, I guess I drink my own Kool-Aid. I am a fast growth company, and I am an entrepreneur myself. And so I just sort of apply my own passions in working with our clients to, continue to focus them on growth and nurturing the people that can help them scale their organization.
And it's my understanding you've also written a book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This year, yes, in May. I published my first book. I have a second one coming behind it, but it's called Adventure, An Outsider's Inside View of Getting an Entrepreneur to Market. And so over 25 years, I've worked with about 170 companies on about 200 product launches. And there are so many commonalities and common places that businesses and organizations trip along the way to scaling up. And so that's sort of, you know, embodied in the book. It's also a fun read. And then the second book coming behind it now, there's a huge focus on youth entrepreneurship. Mm. And so I'm working on the children's book version of Adventure.
Great. I love that. Mm-hmm. Thinking about the next generation
That's
and
right.
how we can prepare them early. So, John, tell us a little bit about your practice and kind of what your focus is.
Well, we're primarily focused around finance. So doing business, taking care of business, figuring out how you're doing in business, how to improve your business is the things that we focus on. Largely tax-centric. Taxation is usually one of the first reasons that I'll talk to someone about doing work for them. Probably because it's so complicated and there's so much to know about it that really no one lives long enough anymore to know it all. So that brings a lot of opportunity to help people straighten things out, and we do a lot of that.
Yeah. So, as I've been thinking about this topic, let's start from a perspective. What if in 2013, you know, I have this grand idea of starting my own business, and in early 2014, I want to launch. So I've got an idea. I'm committed to this. So, John, what might be the first couple of things that I, as this budding entrepreneur that has this great idea from a financial perspective, what are some of the things I really need to be thinking about?
Well, logically, the first thing that happens, you need to open a bank account, which you need a federal ID number to do. So you need to be thinking about what your organization is going to be, proprietorship, LLC, S corporation, C corporation. Those decisions are largely a function of what your income stream you expect to have and how many people you'll have as owners, one owner or several owners. And from there, if you're ready to launch, usually that means you're getting ready, you've hired people, and you've got payroll already. So you have to be dealing with payroll by that time. And that is a problem that people have quite often, is getting that started. It's not that it's that complicated to do once you know the rules, but like anything else, if you don't know them, then you're often in trouble before you realize that you've got a problem. You've got a big problem.
Yeah, so if you were to say that one thing that I need to know about payroll, tell me what that one tidbit is, and then I'm going to turn to Linda to give us some idea about helping think about the people we hire.
Well, the first thing to know about that really is that there's a big conflict between being a subcontractor where you give someone all that they earn, 100%, and whether they are an employee where they're under your direction and control, where payroll taxes are required. And you just can't ignore that question, and it's a big question. And assuming that you do have employees, they are actually employees, then you have to do the withholding. And if you don't pay those taxes timely, that is the fastest way to get in serious trouble financially, because the penalties are atrocious. Mm. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't even want to go there.
Yeah. Okay, great. So Linda, that I've got an idea. I know what my organization is, and I figured out how not to get in trouble with the IRS. So I'm really thinking about people and also thinking about that as it relates to the culture I'm trying to create with the people that I hire. So what are a couple of things that I should be thinking about as I'm beginning to bring more and more people on board?
Well, this is one of these things that's easier said than done, perhaps, but you really have to think through what kind of environment do you want to create from the very, very beginning, and what are your priorities, what are the things you're going to really stand for. Our firm is all about responsiveness, customer service, authenticity, and I don't mean that in any other way than just we say what we mean. We do not play politics with our clients. We often tell some of our clients and sometimes C-suite people what they might not want to hear, but In the end, 90% of the time, that helps us out. And that's an environment we create on our team. Everybody is authentic, and we say what we mean, and we have a really honest environment. So that's one thing about our culture that you would know just sitting in a meeting 5 minutes with us.
So if I'm thinking about culture for this new organization that I'm trying to create, what's one tidbit you might give me that would help me to bring that culture into being? What's you know, something I should be thinking about that's an actual action I need to focus on?
Well, I think you as the leader would have to really think through what kind of environment do you most like to work with and among. And in the past, what kinds of environments have brought out the best in you? And you will be in the position of having to form and lead that type of environment. So it helps if you're really crystal clear with what you personally want and if you thought about it in the past, what you liked.
Great. So, Maura, you talked about you look at sort of broadly marketing, not just the promotion part of this. So what advice are you going to give me this morning?
Well, you know, it's interesting. First of all, I'm glad that John's here so somebody has a deeper voice than me this morning.
That's why they invited me.
See, is that it? Well, I'm really glad you're here. No, but just hearing, you know, the financial perspective and the internal staffing perspective and some of the, you know, questions that you had about culture – it's kind of one of the things as a marketer that we always have to be on guard on with our clients, because when you are an entrepreneur and you think you have a great idea, you can get very caught up in here's how I want it to be, I want my organization to look this way, I need capital, I need staff, I need an office, and you haven't actually really given as much thought to my customer. And how is that customer going to pay for my services? And so, you know, I kind of made a little note here. What comes first, the customer or the staffing and the capital? And so to me, you know, the main thing is to make sure that you're keeping that balanced focus on the customer, monetizing the customer, and ensuring that you don't get caught up in your own inward-facing structure building, and that you're really building around the customer and around the customer's needs. And so for many of the more, let's say, startup organizations, that very often is structuring an organization and building a culture around a key set of perhaps beta clients or, you know, a small core. And then who you become is sort of an offshoot of that early relationship with them. And then you figure out how much staff you can afford. And, of course, you have to stay on the right side of the Fed and, you know, you pay your taxes. But I do find that a lot of particularly early entrepreneurs, you know, let's say 20-somethings or people who've just had one job and now they're going to start their very first company, they get very focused on, I want to be this and I want these kind of titles and I want this kind of office, instead of, this idea is going to serve this marketplace in this way,
right,
and this is why it's going to be really compelling and grow and serve a growing marketplace. And so that's where we always focus people is, you know, that there are a lot of good ideas, but are there enough people to buy that good idea? And certainly don't get a lot of overhead and staff or anything until you've really figured out how to monetize that great idea.
I take it if you start off with some bad practices, they're hard to break, right?
They are
hard to break. And we were talking before the show that for women-owned businesses, mm-hmm, a lot of them are single employee,
mm-hmm,
and
84%.
So scale is a challenge. And the thing that I learned as I was starting my business, and then as I began to have more people work with me, is the degree to which your point that you just made, John, is a challenge, is that you, even just by yourself, ingrain processes or have different things in the way that it should go, and the degree to which you don't even realize when you bring that second person on or that third, mm-hmm, person on, what you have to do to make sure that you have that consistent level of performance, mm-hmm, and that you know, you can continue to deliver on what that product is. And when you start on your own and I just had no idea, mm-hmm, the degree that bad habits of mine were going to come back,
yeah,
to bite me.
And
when
you
I
realize
start
one person increase in your staff is 100%
exactly, yeah,
expansion, and you know, it's a real difficult thing to recognize and deal with.
Yeah. So now let's think about, you know, what advice or what are some of the things that you need to be thinking about your established organization? So now you've been out there forever, or however long it has been. let's talk to that listener out there that maybe 2013 was not their most stellar year. They had, you know, some kind of challenge, and they want to get back on track in 2014. So, Linda, what kinds of things do they need to be thinking about from a people perspective that, you know, can help them, you know, sort of reestablish their footing in 2014?
Well, I think the most important thing is looking at where's the business going. What is the strategy of the business? And then what are the talent implications of that strategy? So if we're bringing new products to market, or we're expanding in a new territory, or we're dropping one line and whatever it is, what are the talent implications? So it might be, wow, we have got to get more skills in digital technology. Or right now, some of our clients, international operations and sales and marketing, those are the hot, hot areas right now. And then you've got to figure out, okay, even if you're small, do I build this talent from within? Do I borrow it on a contingent basis or an intern or a temp or whatever? Or do I buy it? Do I go out and poach or post or whatever to go find it? And on a small scale, those are easier decisions to manage. The decisions might be tough, but then what you do about it is when you're at a larger scale, you have 1,000 employees or 100,000 employees, that is a really strategic approach to year planning. And to me, that's where HR people should be spending 100% of their time, not planning parties, or I know people are going to like send me hate mail, but you know, whatever, like that's true. What it comes down to. It's true.
Yeah. So Linda, let me follow up on that. And I know it's probably some of the questions I'm asking today of you all are, it depends, right? It depends on the situation. But that point about whether you build it or you sort of rent it, so to speak, or you go buy it, what's the key question I should be asking myself that begins to help me determine which of those paths I really should be going down? You know, help me think a little bit through what ones it should be.
That's an excellent question. I mean, and again, in the box of it's easier said than done, but ideally a company at the beginning of the year or prior to that would look at their business strategy for the year, then look at the talent implications, and then if they could, they would say, okay, here are the key skills and behaviors we need. What do we currently have in the business? So there'd be some kind of review of talent. You might call it performance management, but that usually doesn't do a whole lot, or talent review or succession planning or whatever you call it. But there's some vetting of who do we have, who's on tap, what kind of skills do we have, and where are our gaps? So when the gaps are identified, it's like, oh, no, like we really need these skills or backgrounds or whatever. Then it's a matter of what's the marketplace, you know, so we know we don't have it from within. It's probably quickly going to be determined whether we can train this or not. Usually the answer is no in the time that we have. And then it becomes, what's the marketplace? And a lot of companies, especially big companies, get into this, I have a full-time headcount, and I am going to hire a full-time person. And jobs we see, sometimes it's open 6-7 months. It's like, why is this job still open? And someone will say, well, the guy insists that it's, you know, a PhD with 47 years of experience, but he's only going to pay $35,000. You know, so there's got to be some logic applied. It's like, actually, you could find a contractor to do animation right now, but if you're trying to, you know, find a $60,000 a year full-time employee. So it really depends on the market and the demands.
I also have an answer to that question, too, just from the sales and marketing perspective. I think it's how far out can you forecast your revenue? I mean, operationally speaking, you know, let's say you have done that assessment and you absolutely need the skill, you know, in terms of do you borrow it, do you contract it, or do you hire it? Well, if you can see unlimited revenue potential and you must have it as a core of your business and the revenue is going out 2 and 3 years, and that's a headcount. If you sort of think that this is a test area for you and it's a new thing and, you know, you should have it, you know, that might be something that you want to contract because you can't project the revenue out far enough to really cover that. And if it's a very, new area, new division, and you have no experience, you might want to try to borrow some of those resources or get a good strategic partner that can validate that this is a direction or some, you know, skills that you need, brought to the table. But I think, again, from a sales and marketing perspective, everybody – is always asking us, you know, how do you guarantee the revenue, right? How do I know I'm going to get return for this? And it's the same thing on the staffing side. How am I going to pay for this person, and how long can this person pay for themselves? And I think you need to ask that question in addition to, should it be core to the organization and should this be a core competency function? How are we paying for that? And that helps make the decision on whether it's buy or build.
Yeah. So, John, again, for that listener out there that has had an okay year but maybe has had some financial challenges, whether it's cash flow or
I don't know any of those. Yeah. I don't know anybody has any financial challenges.
What kinds of things do you tell your clients to help them get on a stronger footing financially if they've had, you know, some challenges in the past?
Well, the thing that's difficult and is usually breaking old habits. And if you've got a habit of not doing things the way they really should be done, it's very difficult to get people to doing them a different way. People borrow taxes to run their business on. I don't have the money to pay the tax, so I'll pay my rent or I'll pay something else. And if, when you get to the point where you have that kind of issue, you have some problems internally. And they're more, it's not just a tax problem. You have the tax problem generally because you've got other problems. You need to solve some other problems. And you don't want to get into that situation. So maintaining discipline is really important to pay the taxes. The penalties occur when you don't perform. So you want your clients to avoid that problem where possible. And if they find that they're in that problem, if you can tell that in advance, then you can help them not go there. You know, pay the taxes regardless, and even if it means laying people off or cutting people's salary, those are not choices you want to deal with. But you have to have the courage to recognize it, and you have to ask the question that Maura's asking, and that is, where's the revenue coming from? You know, what can I actually do? And where that's the case, then having discipline to do that is very, very important.
Yeah. Maura, you talked about earlier monetizing your product, and you've helped many organizations with product launches. Mm-hmm. So if that's something that I'm extending my product line and going in an actual new product, not just an extension of something we're doing, how does your firm help me think about that, and what kind of services do you provide to help me be prepared to do that?
Okay. Well, again, this goes back to business strategy and working closely with the CEO, CFO, and the head of sales of an organization. But often when you are, let's say, expanding, you know, let's say it's an ancillary product or something, it's related. You know, the best way to find out what the market will bear is to start with your customer base. So if your existing customers are a market for that product and service, you know, doing focus groups and really, you know, understanding what the existing client base will do is where we would focus. And we're not quantitative analytical pricing experts, but we very much get what common sense, you know, would tell. So, you know, a lot of what we would help a client with is looking at who the chief competitors are and what their price points appear to be, you know, how successful are each of those companies being in getting to market. So, you know, if our client happens to be late to the table, you know, then you have a lot of great resources already to draw on because you know what the other players are doing. If you're the first to lead in that area, it's very hard. And our advice is always get it into the market and let the market tell you. Let's not sit here for 9 months doing consulting decks and analytics on what might be and, you know, all these, you know, metrics. Let's test different price points. Let's go grab a client, sell it in with them, even if it's at a, you know, a discount to get it engaged and to do the proof of concept and then find out what people are willing to do. And I think that's a key theme back to this growth matters and getting people to accelerate into 2014. I feel that a lot of people have slowed down and have, you know, to your point as well, the you know, waiting 9 months to fill a less perfect position. I think a lot of people are doing the same thing, waiting 9 months to find the perfect price point, waiting 9 months to determine if they really should enter a market, waiting for the perfect employee instead of testing in the marketplace and learning as you go. So I think that, you know, to really get out of the gate with a product, you pick a few key places that you should be with it. And, again, we're B2B, so we're not looking for, in many cases, you know, 50,000 customers, 100,000 customers. Many of our clients will have 10 to 40 key customers for an offering. So in our case, we kind of have a benefit of a smaller pool of people to do that with. But I think that's also consistent with what large consumer organizations do. They would often pilot something in a city or pick a region.
Can I ask a question about the elephant in the room?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's are you finding the healthcare issue causing any problems in the folks you're talking to?
Yes. Well, problems and opportunities because, first of all, Atlanta, most people know this, but Atlanta and the Southeast region is one of it is the hub in the country for healthcare IT. So on the plus side, in terms of a marketplace, all of the changes and everything going on has created a lot of industry, and a lot of that is peaking here in Atlanta. So health business is great here. Now, the implications of the healthcare laws are impacting also all of our clientele. No one knows what pricing is going to be, and not just what business owners are going to have to pay or augment in health insurance costs, but for a lot of our clients who are in the food chain of healthcare, what processes they will need to change to be compliant. And so there's a lot of uncertainty, and that's where we say start trying something.
Was that slowing down employment as far as answering the questions you're talking about with respect to people waiting?
Linda, how are you seeing that playing out?
Well, we work with very large companies. So L'Oreal, Allied Barton, I mean, almost all Fortune 500 companies. And it goes right back to culture, I believe, because some of those companies on one end of the continuum would never in a million years think about cutting an employee's hours so that they don't have to pay for the healthcare for them. On the other end of the spectrum, there's companies that are just chomping at the bit to do it. And they think it's going to save costs, and it in many ways will save costs. Of course, then you have to look at attrition, and it may or may not be short-sighted. We'll see. But it goes right back to culture and talking about, I find it so fascinating, this reticence to make decisions and get stuff done. And it's coming at the worst possible time. You are all these businesses, very big firms, pockets in the organization, just paralyzed. And I think a lot of it stems from just personal fear. Like we all realize, God, if we lost our job, if we lost our healthcare, like how awful it'd be. And I think people personalize that to the point that decision making is pushed down as many levels as possible. Hiring decisions, 17 people need to interview this candidate over the course of 6 months. When in fact, what needs to happen is we need to pull the trigger quicker, take chances, be innovative, take risks. A perfect example is how HR can crush the innovation in a company sometimes is we need to fill a job. And we found the most awesome candidate. But guess what? He's never worked for a big company. He lives in his parents' basement. He might be stoned half the time, but he's got the most unbelievable development experience. You know, present company excluded. No, totally kidding.
He lives next door to me.
Or it's a woman who has young kids, and she's like, I'm not commuting for 2 hours. I will work virtually. This is a computer-based job. And an HR person saying, oh, no, that's not, no, this is you have to be here every day.
Yeah, so one of the things that as I'm listening to our guests talk, the week before last, I was doing a strategic planning session with an organization, and their key sort of mantra or focus was agility. Mm-hmm. How do we ensure that we are agile? Whether that's with the people that are working with us and helping them to understand that, whether that's how we understand our business, our clients' needs, and we can react to that, and they're in a technology space, but also that our technology can be reactive. And so that has been, you know, much on my mind just because it was a really good session. So, again, thinking of Fast Start, for 2014. And I don't think that need to be agile is going to go away anytime soon. I mean, the pace of change is very fast. What do you see from a perspective? And I'm going to turn it to each one of you. As a leader, how and what are you doing to ensure that your organization is agile? And maybe we can take that lesson into what we might do for our own organization. So John, you know, how are you as a leader making sure that your organization is agile?
Well, a long time ago, I remember sitting down and saying, well, you know, one of these days everybody's going to have a computer. Boy, can you just imagine that even being a question today? Mm-hmm. And today, the work that I do, you know, is probably 5% the same as it was 20 years ago, just because of change in technology. So you have to look at all of that, and everybody wants to have to get things just right and keep them that way, but there actually isn't any such thing. Mm-hmm. It's always changing, and so if you look at it from the perspective of what's coming, and you start trying to say, I need to address that in some way or other, and you have to make that and make some choices about that. So for me, what I've decided personally is that I want to do things you can't easily automate. You know, it takes some skill, personal skills, technical skills, some knowledge, and so on, to do those things. Those are the things that I like to do anyway. So instead of being automated and having 1,000 people running computers doing accounting work like ADP, and no negative reflection on ADP, but I don't want to do that. So I don't do that. And that's what every business, I believe, should do and think about. What is it that we do? What do we want to do? And it's much more fundamental than just saying we sell widget A or widget B, you know, or we're a manufacturing company selling something to do a certain thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So before I turn to you more, the follow-up that I would say to that, and I really appreciate, is I think as being a leader in any organization, whether it's an entrepreneurial one or it's a large organization, is what I took away from that, John, is you got to get comfortable within yourself as a leader as to where your space is going to be. And it may not be the space that everyone says. Right. This is where it should be. It may even be counter to what some people think, and a lot of times that's where innovation comes out of, or you're able to address something. So I really appreciate that as sort of, you know, one of those takeaways that you got to think about what you want for your organization, what makes sense, and then sort of stand in that space and say, this is, we're going to build a business around that. But more as you think about agility and your organization, because mm-hmm. you're fast growing. Mm-hmm. What are some very specific things as a leader you're putting in place to make sure that that can continue on even at past you?
Yeah. Well, it has to be past me. It has to be past me now. And it is. And I think, you know, again, back to, you know, John's comment about, you know, you have to know who you want to be and how you want to be, how you want to distinguish yourself and differentiate yourself. And so then you absolutely must recruit the kinds of people that are going to be in that same vein, you know, drink the same Kool-Aid, follow the religion. And so in my own case, and I've just written down, you know, a couple things, to be agile, you have to be comfortable in chaos, particularly, you know, and
that's true.
And continuous chaos, because change and growth is a constant. So as soon as you get comfortable with something, it's going to change again. So one of the things that I'm constantly doing is working with the entire staff on how they can be more comfortable when they're not comfortable, because the whole goal is not to get everybody comfortable.
Right.
You know, the other thing is that nobody knows, right? There's this, particularly when you have younger staff coming in, you know, and coming out of college, at least the way I think college is structured today, people think that leaders in business know the answers, know what they need, have requirements, that process is linear, and then they come into the real world, and they're really surprised that it isn't that way. And
can I amen that?
Yeah.
Amen.
And so, you know, one of the first things I say over and over and over is no one knows. Nobody knows. That's why they're here. That's why they need help. They don't have the answers. And so, you know, really getting young people comfortable with what is your gut telling you about this situation, you know, and what have they both said and not said? And so to me, agility is getting every single individual in my company to trust their gut and to be comfortable in this sort of chaotic arena, because that's who we are drawn to. We are drawn to large clients who bring us in. They open the kimono. We are at the top of the organization. Those people tend to be very comfortable telling you what the real issues are. It's the people further down the food chain that are busy protecting themselves and, you know, not saying what the real story is. But if you're at the top of the organization, they're going to say, we don't know what the heck we're doing over here, and people are blowing past us in this business, and we have got to get this market share. And then you have to have people meet them at the table with an idea of what that means, how you might solve those problems. And so to be agile, you have to be able to decide quickly, and you can't rely on a large team to help you do that. You've got to go with your own individual gut.
Linda, what are you sort of struggling with as it relates to agility and how we might take a lesson from that?
Well, I was all prepared to answer this for other companies. So for us, it's actually the exact opposite in some respects with what John said. You said we want to provide value where it can't easily be automated.
Right.
And so I have two businesses. The consulting business is resource intensive. It's great. I love it. My team's awesome. We have awesome clients, and we really just are constantly facing new and different challenges. So that's great. But there's stuff that we get into that we're over and over. And I worked for The Gap and Pepsi and Home Depot, and then have been doing this business for 10 years. I'm so sick of doing my whole team. And it's a couple years ago, we said, we keep doing this stuff over and over again, and it's so inefficient for the client. It's we hate this work, and I'll tell you what they are. So we've built technology solutions to address them. One is job descriptions.
Mm.
You've got to have a job description. I don't care what it looks like. You've got to have something that describes, if you're hiring a position, what is that position? And ideally, when you fill the job, that you'd actually explain to the person what good looks like and that you'd hold them accountable for it later. So whatever you want to call that, job descriptions, Dilbert, HR, fine, whatever. So we build an application to really speed and scale and drive consistency and effectiveness in the process of building job descriptions. And then interview guides. Everywhere we go, well, can you teach our hiring managers how to interview? Can you help us build interview guides? And we've done it for years and years. And finally, we're like, we need to build a tool that lets people do this on the fly really well. And there's nothing out there that does it. And we did it. So I don't want to do that work anymore.
Well, that's but see, you've done what I was saying you do. You make it, you take something and you make it where you can do it. So you're not doing what you used to
right.
do. You're running a way to do it.
Right.
And that's really what I'm talking about. You may be solving the same things, but you're doing it in a way that doesn't bore you to death
yes.
every time you see the opportunity come up.
That's great.
Yeah, so I was reading something before the show started, and it was talking about, as you're thinking about planning, one of the questions you should ask yourself is, where did the big surprises, good or bad, come from this past year? And I thought that was a very interesting question. Where did the big surprises, good or bad, come from this year? So as you think about the clients that you are working with, you know, where are sort of, are there some themes or there's some key areas where they're sort of caught off guard that you might be able to then give our listeners some advice that says that's coming or something in that area is coming that throws people off? And so for you to even be thinking about that before the bump in the road gets here, here's what you might do, John.
Well, the one that comes to mind when you mention that is there are these things out there called self-directed IRAs. Now, I work a lot for people who own businesses as well as working for the business. So it's usually an interrelated financial mm-hmm. planning and calculation and consideration situation. And if you have one of these self-directed IRAs, that means, okay, in my IRA, I'm going to buy a house and rent it out, you know, or I'm going to buy it, my office building, and I'm going to have it in my IRA. These things are possible. And that has grown to be much bigger business in recent years. Well, the situation has occurred where people do things, you know, that they shouldn't do. It's actually not the way those were designed to operate.
Can't
be. You've heard of people who took advantage of things. Mm-hmm. Well, that area the IRS is looking at more strongly today And a small error there could cause your plan to be disqualified and could cause you a huge tax bill, far exceeding what the size of the transaction that might have avoided it was amounting to. For example, a $10,000 transaction voids the whole issue that you have as far as being tax exempt, and now you've got a $190,000 penalty as a result. You know, that kind of scale you don't want to have happen. So in the area of self-directed IRAs, if you have one of those or if anyone has one of those, then they should look at that and be sure they're doing it properly and not maybe they might need help. If they haven't had any assistance with that, then I'd recommend they talk to somebody that does that as a full-time activity to see if they're okay.
Okay. Linda, what's a common surprise or something that throws your clients off their game in the area of HR?
Well, I would say what we saw this past year that's a little bit new and different, and it affects none of the companies I've already mentioned, is this willingness on the part of the most senior talent leader, the head of HR or whatever, to actually sit down and say, staffing is completely broken at this company. The way in which we recruit people is completely broken. And in the past, it would be, I mean, we've done this kind of work for 10 years, so it'd be like, well, this, you know, our technology is really not working, or we don't know if our recruiters are good or whatever. But now it's like, seems like a whole scale, wholesale approach or willingness to recognize we are spending $20 million on this function. The perception is recruiting is easy. There's a million people out of work. Find one, put them in. What's so hard? The level of noise in the organization from everybody who's a hiring manager or an employee who applied to another job is growing and growing to the point that they're desperate for help. And what I would say, if you're a small or large business, the staffing train wreck is ahead. So cut the switch. I don't know. I can't take the train analogy any further. But it will blow up unless there's some very fundamental pieces in place. And it's got to enable your business or it's just awful.
Do you think that's because of its being bureaucratized, the process?
It's bureaucratized. I would say the biggest problem we see everywhere we go, whatever kinds of work we're doing, is unclear roles and responsibilities and measures of success. Mm. So wherever we are, whether it's talent management, talent acquisition, it doesn't matter. People are like, what? I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing. And what are your goals? Oh, I don't know. So that's the fundamental piece.
So that's training to a large extent.
Right? It's really... It's what are we trying to accomplish as a function? What is the point of this $20 million we're spending? The second thing that people do in HR, and I blame senior leaders, is they relegate the lowest paid, poorest performers in the organization. Does this sound bad?
No, go ahead.
Sometimes to HR. Like they will put new college grads who, granted, might be very attractive in a recruiting position, pay them $20,000 and expect them to fill director, strategic jobs. And it cannot be done.
They can't do it, yeah.
All right, so the marketing gotchas. One of them is human capital that we've seen this year, so it goes back to staffing, and that is lack of alignment in the sales and marketing organization. Actually, before I cover that, I'll hit the other one, which is the written plan. So what we've seen is people want immediate revenue. And so they now, in the old world, people say, oh, well, it takes 18 months for marketing to gain good traction. Well, now you have to, it has to happen in a month or two now, right? It has to be immediate. I need to have the evidence of how this works. And so everyone has been putting revenue towards lead generation and new client acquisition. And one of the things that was a big gotcha for a lot of our clients, and this is not a new gotcha, it's a constant, but everybody wants the new clients and the new lead gen, but in many organizations, 90% of their revenue comes from the existing client base, and they will completely ignore inbound customer programs, customer retention, customer expansion, and so they don't use marketing to assist with that because, now that's an account manager's job. That's not marketing's job. Marketing's job is just to get us those new people, and I couldn't disagree more. And so that's one of the gotchas is making sure that marketing is equally being applied to help you retain and grow that existing customer base. And then the other thing in the alignment side of it is because so many companies have been very aggressive about the lead gen, we've found a lot of our companies that their objectives are hunting. Their incentive program is hunting, and they have 15 salespeople, all of whom are farmers. You know, and they've been there for 10 years or 15 years, slowly, you know, helping people understand certain things. But what the organization needs is some really aggressive people that already have a book of business or are going to go out and bring these people in. And so we have a lot of clients who are reticent to remove the farmers, but will continue to put out plans that are very aggressively new client acquisition. You know, we need people who are solution sellers, but they are not staffed in a sales capacity with those people. And so that puts, you know, some challenges on the sales and marketing effort. Sure, we can help the company market to acquire those new people, and we can help the company be positioned for that. But then if the selling people and the people that actually interact with those customers don't have the right skills to close the deal, marketing sometimes is holding the bag.
Does that come back to haunt you in some cases? Do you ever call that out as a gotcha, like up front, to say you're not staffed for this?
Yes. And in fact, I'd say there are two or three of our clients that it's been an ongoing dialogue all year. And sometimes we'll help them with that where we say, okay, I had a conference call yesterday with one of the clients where they need to focus on both areas. So we said, well, you've been looking at your territory planning. We've been looking at your regions and who your staffing is. And they are a more progressive company that is looking at sales playbook, staffing, onboarding, you know, doing the right things. But we said, okay, let's take who you have now, since you can't get rid of who you have now, and perhaps consider breaking them into two groups. These are the farmers and these are the hunters. And now, how will marketing help the hunters hunt, and how will marketing help the farmers farm, so that they even see a distinction between those things before marketing is being blamed for not doing its job?
Linda, I want to take something that you just said, Maura, and piggyback on something I know your firm does, and that is around skill building and skill development. And so what I want to pick up from what you just said, Maura, is you have who you have. At the moment, we might need to go out and do some talent acquisition. Mm-hmm. But there's a core group of people that we have that we think if we help them in some key areas, mm-hmm. that might be something that will help us meet our 2014 objectives. And so this whole idea of developing our people, and with the internet, there's free courses out there. There's just so many different ways that you can get new learnings and help to become a learning organization. Talk to us a little bit about some of the things you're doing with your technology product, I think, if I'm on the right path here, Linda, that helps an organization sort of grapple with that.
Well, we have a technology called Skill Builder, and where it works best in organizations where the feedback they've gotten, either through engagement surveys or exit interviews, is very clear around employees feel like they're not getting the feedback, they're not getting development, whatnot. So we have a self-directed learning and development tool that we map to a company's competency model. I know I'm veering into Dilbert territory here, but the most important skills and behaviors for a company. So it's influencing, it's business acumen, it's strategic thinking, it's agility, whatever. We will aggregate a ton of free content for a person to access at any time to work on in very bite-sized chunks. Multimedia, but a lot of stuff you just – TED Talks, Coursera, but also self-directed activities, and that's all great. That's good. However, my non-HR hat would be you – if you're thinking about developing people from within, I think we have to recognize it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And there are very discrete roles where it works well. At Home Depot, they have associate merchants, senior merchants, you know, merchandising managers. That is a really perfect place from a business strategic perspective that we need to develop people up that chain. Same with stores, restaurant management, district manager, whatever. But if you're trying to – if there's someone over here who's in HR and they want to work in marketing or a finance guy, now some of that is great. But you have to look at the person's core competencies. Are they able to influence? Are they effective at collaboration? Can they drive results? Can they make courageous leadership decisions? If so, then it might make sense. But we try to appease people by thinking it's possible, and it's not possible anymore. Yeah. To the extent that it ever was, and it's not good for anybody. So we need to stop thinking you go to classroom training and then I can move into a different function.
Yeah, my mom, who I get a lot of wisdom from, you know, when you're growing up, you don't always think your parents have that, but then you get older and you have some experiences, and you think, ah, that's a pretty smart woman over there. And you know, one of the things that she used to always say is, you know, some people are can'ts, and you can keep pouring your resource into a can't, and I don't mean to just be flippant about that, but, you know, kind of to right. your point, you could get them to be better at that, but if that's not a core competency, if it's not where their interest lies, continuing to pour resource into that can't is going to get you frustrated, and it potentially hurts your business because then you're not having them focused in an area that is a can. Right, and if that need is something that your business needs, that's important.
On that point, and this is something going on in my own organization right now. I think another thing you have to look at is often some people can be developed along a path, but that path might take 2 or 3 years, and your business may need it in 3 months. And so you have to continue to protect the morale and move people along the path and let them see that this doesn't close off a future path for them. And in our own organization right now, I've got a lot of tenure on my staff, but some people whose core DNA does not contain some of the positions that we need. And so we are going to hire from outside a couple of positions. Now, that does not threaten the people in the organization that are on a path to learn some of these skills. You may have this very same role in 5 years. It doesn't mean that you're not good or don't have the promise or potential for it and can't be developed into it, but not quickly enough. And I think that is another thing. I completely agree. I see people around from position to position to appease them and waste a lot of time with that, you know, thinking they're going to solve, you know, putting a Band-Aid on something. And I think that, again, acting quickly is critical. And you can drag these things out. So like this year, 2013, I did a ton of professional development, and I'm not going to stop doing that. I'm coaching the hell out of everybody. But there's still a young group of people, and there is a need for seniority when you are acting quickly and making some of these high-level, C-level, you know, I think you called it executive courageousness. You know, you have to have some seniority in the mix too. And I think you have to be realistic about how quickly the people you have can get where you need them to be.
Well, I was interested you bring that up. I'm interested in your comment regarding leadership, if that's an issue with what you find with the larger groups of people not doing things. Is it they don't have anybody leading them, or they just you have a lot of people who aren't really interested in trying to do more than they're doing?
I think people just are reticent to make really tough decisions. Less so at the executive level because they have so much skin in the game. But what happens at the executive level that I observe is they surround themselves subconsciously, unintentionally, with people that are just falling all over them. Yes, you're right. That's a brilliant plan.
Yes, people.
Well, and that really inhibits the ability to do things differently. I want to go back to a point you made about agility. I would say about agility or innovation or whatever the topic is that a company's got to wrestle with and get better at, that the old way of doing this, of trying to promote agility. Let's send everybody to an agility class, or let's do this or that, whatever. I mean, we have to change the way we're dealing with this entirely. If a company wants agile employees, they have to actually hire people that are proven to be agile. And I do not mean putting them through an interview. I mean actually immersing them in simulations to test them. How can you react? How will you react to this? And selecting people based on how well they can do this or that or whatever the key skill is. And even existing employees, bringing them together, putting them through very active situations that simulate real business problems and observing how they behave.
I wish we had another hour to get into
that's
that
cool.
more.
Yeah,
because then you identify pockets of strengths that are key to your business and you can leverage them versus let's put everybody through courses on XYZ.
Yeah, so I'm hearing a lot of echoing, yes, that makes sense. You all are giving, I think, our listeners some really great food for thought. I want to transition a little bit to focus forward and thinking about trends in the areas in which each of you address that you see are sort of up-and-coming areas of focus that you think our listeners need to be thinking about. Again, that idea of we're preparing for a fast start in 2014, but we want to continue to have fast starts in 2015, 16, 17, and beyond. So, John, what's some one or two trends that are on the horizon and what would you suggest our listeners do to make sure that they are prepared to address them?
Well, of course, as I mentioned earlier, the big issue right now is the insurance issue. There's a lot that has a lot to do with the taxation, tax credits. It affects the businesses. It affects all the employees of every business. So what goes on there is important. And from a financial perspective, regardless of how you feel about any of the stuff personally or politically. So you have to stay tuned in to what's happening there. And there are some decisions. Georgia has said the insurance commissioner, that Georgia is one of those states where you can extend your policy into 2014, to the end of 2014. And if a company has a policy, they should look at doing that, and they'd have to do that by the end of this year. If you don't have the information on that, you should contact your insurance company and talk to them about that. And going into 2014, again, this is a big issue. In the tax area, really it's largely dependent on the kind of business you're in. There are tax credits for various things. And they're there, and there's no, in spite of all of the interest in tax reform and all that, my guess is we're not going to see what I would call considerable improvement in the situation overall. It may change, but and don't over tax plan, because things change out there, and the things we get used to very quickly. And they become institutionalized, but Congress can change them on a day's notice, and they frequently do.
Yeah. Again, going back to you got to be agile.
That's correct.
Werner, what are one or two trends, and what would you suggest we do to stay ahead of them?
Yeah, one of the trends that we see in marketing is there used to be this annual planning process, or some companies would do it twice a year, right? And they'd review their budget and their product plans and all of that. And we're seeing this truncating down to quarterly and sometimes monthly reviews. So there is no annual marketing budget anymore. It's quarterly, and it is tied to quarterly performance that's coming in on sales. So it's more real time, which requires you to be understanding the business's reality and the real payoff of your work. And so that means you don't do an annual planning process. You also, as a marketer, have to meet them there where you're, you know, constantly assessing what's going on. Another thing, social media, CRM, and the digital
CRM
world, customer relationship management, you know, and marketing automation, Salesforce automation, all of those things. All of these are technologies or have been viewed as, you know, the shiny objects that everybody must do, and a lot of money has gone towards these things. And so, again, in this world of every month, how are we making money? A careful balance with us right now is not following the shiny objects, but making sure that any of these objects make sense for our clients. And had a call with a client the other day that said, yes, this year we're only going to be participating in revenue-generating expenses, right? So, you know, when you're participating in only revenue generating expenses, you know, you have to then know how the revenue ties back to the expense you right. have. And some of these things take a long time to generate revenue or don't. You know, some of them will cost you revenue if they're not implemented properly or if it doesn't make sense for your organization. So, you know, another thing there I would say, you know, we fought a lot of social media. You know, a lot of our clients just clamored, I got to have a Facebook page. I got to have friends. I got to have followers. I got to, you know. And we said, why? And so the main thing that to me is a takeaway for these companies is don't follow trends and don't look for the shiny object, but determine if the trend or that future idea is truly going to help you build a relationship with a customer. And if you know that it will and the way that it will, then it will probably tie to revenue, and then it makes sense to be a thing that you do.
That's a great point. Linda, a couple of trends and what
I would say
think about.
On the side of business owners, hiring managers, people in companies, it's really time to embrace what they've been hearing for a while, which is everybody's job is finding talent, finding and keeping talent. It's not recruiters, you know, whatever. It's we have to leverage our own networks to find our own people. And on the side of HR, probably a little bit more negative, is it's inevitable that business leaders are going to look at their HR resources and really look critically about what kind of value they're adding and how they're driving revenue. And if they are, if they even understand the business. So for HR professionals, we have to understand the business and add value way more than we ever thought about it in the past.
Great. Well, this has been a great show, because I think no matter where you are in sort of business, whether you're starting an organization, you have one that's been around, whether you've are successful and you're building on that, or you've had some challenges and you need to regroup, or you're just an executive in a firm, I think some of the things that we've talked about are applicable. And so I hope our listeners have been taking copious notes, because I think it'll really help you from a perspective of 2014. I want to give each of our guests just an opportunity to share how our listeners can contact you to further the dialogue if they've caught something that you've shared that they think they need in their organization. So I'll start with you, Linda.
Sure. It's linda@designsontalent.com.
Okay. John?
My website is johnmasterscpa.com. And if you look me up on the internet, there's several other John Masters in this country, in this and in this state. So I'm not a hairdresser.
Okay.
on the side.
Although your hair looks very nice today,
well,
John.
Thank you very much.
And I can be reached at, and this is terrible because both are hard to spell, Moira, which is M-O-I-R-A, at modoagency.com, and that's M-O-D as in dog, O. So many people think it's Moto Moto from Madagascar, and it's not. It's a D.
It's a D. Yes. Great. So here's my final question for each of you, and this one is a reflective one that has you think about something in your past. So I always ask my guests, think back to your 20-year-old self, you know, your 20-year-old self. And if you could give that 20-year-old some advice, knowing what you know today, what's the one thing you'd tell your 20-year-old self? So, Maura, I'm going to start with you.
Well, this may sound egotistical. I would say keep doing what you're doing. I started working as a temp when I was 18. I only went to school at night, and I aggressively in my first job was exposed to every line function. So I was a receptionist, a customer person. I was a sales manager. I was a finance person. And that grounding has been just priceless my whole career. And I also, coming from an immigrant father, first generation, had work ethic bred into me at the beginning. I started working when I was 7 in family business. And so I always have acted, and my 20-year-old self acted, as if it was my business, whether I was an employee of someone else, whether I was a temp, whatever it was. And so I would tell myself to keep that up, because that's what got me here, and that's what I'm trying to now teach the people in my organization. You've got to act like this is your own business. You've got to take complete accountability and responsibility, you know, just keep doing what you're doing and do it harder and do it better.
Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing a little bit about that, because the other thing that I took from that is that you know, you had a non-traditional start, perhaps, mm-hmm. given where you are, and mm-hmm. so you know, you really can maybe change the trajectory of your career based yep. on working hard, taking ownership, and moving forward. So thanks for also sharing that Absolutely. For our listeners. John, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
Oh, my goodness. My 20-year-old self, it was a lot like Maura's, actually. And I would just say this. If I would recommend that they do what I did, and that was when I graduated from college, which was a struggle and so on, to interview extensively mm-hmm. and find out what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And that was, I hate interviewing, I loathe the process, but I did it, and I learned a lot, and I'm glad that I did, because I had very little job change after,
mm-hmm. you figured
after
it out.
I graduated from college.
Great. Linda?
I would say be nice to even the most annoying vendors, mm-hmm. because one day you will be one.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for your insights and your tidbits and just being so open and honest for our listening audience. So join us next week right here at 10 o'clock on Fridays, where we talk about it, because growth matters.